Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is bonus episode number 20. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. Bonus episode number 20 is another interview review show, very similar to the one we dropped a couple of days ago. In a few moments I'll be joined by writer-director Joe Bagos to chat about his new movie, The Mind's Eye. The Mind's Eye has just made its way a couple of days ago, last Friday past, August the 5th, to VOD and iTunes. And our interview is going to discuss the making of that movie, some projects he may have in the works coming up, as well as a review which will follow on from that interview. So stick around, plenty of content coming up on this short bonus episode. So with that in mind, I'm going to take a short break. When I return, I'll be joined by Joe Bagos, director of The Mind's Eye, right after this.
Zach, my name is Dr. Michael Slovak. I study the phenomenon of psychokinesis. I own and operate my own research facility.
I know who you are. We all do.
Every county in the state is looking for that car and two people to match your description.
How powerful is he?
I don't know, but the things I've seen him do, he's dangerous.
Once I learned there were others out there, I knew there must be a way to transfer that. And I was right.
Do you think he'll ever stop looking for us?
Not until one of us is dead.
You do what you need to do with the father. I want those two back here by dawn. Give the kid a gun and do what I ask. From me now. I'm the only thing you have.
Slovak!
And welcome back. So it is my distinct privilege and pleasure at this time to be joined by Joe Bagos. He is the director of The Mind's Eye, which is coming to VOD August 5th. Hi Joe, it's a pleasure speaking to you. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. So like I said there, your new movie, The Mind's Eye, is making its way to VOD August 5th. Can you tell us a little bit about what the movie's actually about?
It is a 1991 set telekinetic splatter movie that takes place in a blizzard in a small Stephen-esque New England town. And this doctor is tracking down telekinetics to take fluids from their brain in order to make a synthetic serum that may or may not give him telekinetic powers. And in the process also mutates his body in a very Cronenbergian fashion.
Yeah, I watched the movie for the first time last night and followed the instructions, turned the volume right up. My neighbours did not love me last night. but the first thing that I was going to say is, was touching on the Cronenberg kind of angle. I know the movie's been compared in some respects to Scanners, which I would imagine as a filmmaker is a huge compliment. But was that in the back of your mind when you were working on this project? Was it that it kind of fits in a similar fashion to the world of a movie like Scanners? And if so, how did it change the direction that you went about filming it?
Well, Scanners was definitely a huge influence. I fucking love Scanners. I love Scanners 2 as well, not really 3, but I like Scanner Cop movies. But, you know, a lot of people ask me about Scanners, this movie, and while it was a big influence, I was actually a little more influenced by The Fury, the Brian De Palma film.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, I love. It's weird because I think that Scanners has some amazing aspects, but I also think there's some really weak points. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with The Fury. I think The Fury has some amazing aspects, but it has some really weak points. So I think that there's like this hodgepodge of like a perfect movie if you were to cram those two movies together. So, and I also feel like The Scanners itself has such a cool mythology, but, you know, Cronenberg is definitely more of a psychological guy, and the sequels weren't really done by a really good director as a producer of the first movie. So I feel like we never really got like the sequel to Scanners that we need. Like, I wish that somebody would have taken Scanners like it was Alien and made their Aliens sequel to Scanners, you know, and that was sort of what I wanted to do. I wanted to take, you know, the way that these 80s telekinesis movies were done, but put my own spin on it where it was fucking nonstop balls to the wall. And that's what I really like about some of those older movies, is I really like the fast pacedness, the gags, the effects, the set pieces. So I wanted to put that spin on something like Scanners, because there just hasn't been, you know, nobody does telekinesis movies anymore, especially in the horror world. It's found footage or it's PG-13. There hasn't been a fucking balls to the wall, hard, fucking gory, you know, telekinesis movie in a long time. And that's initially what attracted me to doing this movie, the fact that there's really not much else out there like it, you know?
Yeah, this is your second successive movie, kind of looking at, you could say, kind of sci-fi horror, that weird kind of amalgamation of kind of science fiction and horror together. Would you say that's something that particularly attracts you as a filmmaker? Is that your kind of niche, or was it just coincidental that this one kind of falls within a similar sort of subgenre as your previous movie, Almost Human?
I don't know. It's weird because I definitely would consider myself more of a horror fan, but then a straight horror fan. But then when doing these movies, you know, there's definitely a sci-fi edge to them. And I feel like that's just because it comes to me because there's not a lot of stuff like that. And I just like putting together genres and ideas and mashing that stuff together. And I feel like it's an interesting way to do things. And, you know, it definitely wasn't intentional. And then now looking back, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can kind of see that. And then, you know, I wrote like a really gory time travel horror movie with my buddy that it's like, oh, wow, this is another one like that. So it's not really intentional, but I think it kind of just comes through naturally because I love those type of movies. And I mean, you know, my makeup effects guys coined the term sci-fi splatter, which I think is kind of a cool. I don't mind being the sci-fi splatter guy. You know, if that means I get to make robot movies and cloning movies and time travel movies and telekinesis movies with fucking amputations and exploding heads and monsters. I mean, Jesus Christ, sign me up.
So, like, you touched on something there that I find like infinitely fascinating and at the same time very exciting about these past two movies, especially is the kind of importance on practical gore effects, which is something that the industry has but nowhere near as much as it did in the heyday of the 80s, for example. What's your take on that? I mean, is it very important for you that if we're going to have some blood, if we're going to have some gore, then we need to get the special effects guys in and less on the computer?
Yeah, that is actually, it's very important to me. And there's this weird thing with movies now where, I don't know, they feel synthetic in a way. And the thing I like about old movies is, you know, they're all hand, like, you built this stuff, it's there. Like, that's what excited me as a kid about these movies. And, like, when I was a teenager, we were building effects and models and fucking doing shit like that. And it's like, if we could do that as teenagers, why can't you guys do it now? And having done this, and it's like, I know that these movies in the 80s were doing this stuff. So it's like, for me, you can't have a $150 million movie by the best filmmaker in the world. They can't make digital blood or digital gore look good. So how the fuck are we going to do it on a $500,000 budget or a $200,000 budget? It's never going to happen. And you know what? All those movies that I grew up loving that were made for $100,000, they all have practical gore. So it's possible to do it. And I just don't get to thinking. It's like, oh, well, we don't have the time to do it. And it's like, if you add 2 days to your schedule to do, you know, you don't even have to pay the makeup effects guys more. Just give them 2 days of time to do what they need to do. That's going to beat spending $10,000 in post to do an effect that's never going to look good. If you're there on set, you can direct that effect until it looks good enough to shoot. If you're in post, you're only going to be as good as what this guy gives you. You know what I mean? You're never going to get better than that. And the fact that we're a tiny movie that was made for a couple $100,000, we shot for 37 days. We had all fucking practical effects. There isn't 1 ounce of digital blood on there. So you know what? If any movie, if a $10 million horror movie says that it's a timing or a money issue, they're fucking lazy, because yeah. It's not. And we were able to do it. And I feel like if anything, whether you hate our movie or like our movie, you should be able to look at it and go, oh, maybe we shouldn't be so fucking lazy, because these guys went out and did it for no money and did everything fucking practically. So that's just super important to me. And I want to be able to make a movie, I didn't shoot this one on film, but to me, I want to be able to make a movie that utilizing the tools that, you know, you could have used in the 80s. And like for this, the only CG we had was wire removal. And I'm so grateful for the fact that we live in an age where you can do wire removal in 10 minutes on your computer. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't make up for the fact that, oh, you can also do digital blood on your computer in 10 minutes. You know, you should use the tools that we have to augment what's worked for 100 years. Yeah. And that's just the way that I feel about movies. You know, same thing with Fire. Oh, every movie that it's digital fire, I'm always like, that looks so fucking terrible. You know what? We had real fire in this movie, and now knowing how much it costs, how much guys you needed on set, anybody who doesn't do it is fucking lazy. It costs us like $3,000 to have fire on set for 10 hours, and I guarantee you doing 9 effect shots of CGI fire is going to cost a hell of a lot more than that. So I just don't understand the thinking, to be honest, to do anything but real. So it baffles me.
You had a fantastic cast on this movie, and it saw you reunited again with Graham Skipper from Almost Human. How much of that experience working with him on Almost Human factored into his getting the role in The Mind's Eye? And also, can you talk to us a little bit about the cameo from Larry Fessenden? I'm a huge Fessenden fan. Whenever he's on screen, I'm excited, because I know he's likely going to die and it's probably going to be quite gnarly. What was that experience like?
Well, with Graham, I approached Graham with the Almost Human script, because we had been working together on Reanimated the Musical, and, you know, of course he did it. And that was the first time that I, like, had a real legitimate actor who's studied and, like, this is his life in the lead role of a movie. And, of course, you know, the role was so underwritten that he did wonders with it, but it also opened up my eyes to be, like, because I'd never worked with actors, like, real actors before, to be like, oh, wow, the freeing experience of writing something for somebody must be so awesome. So I decided off the bat that Graham was going to be the star of Mind's Eye before I even wrote a script. So I wrote the script with him in mind. He would read every draft, you know, and I fought very hard. That was another thing, is when I brought the script around, nobody wanted Graham. And if they wanted me to hire, you know, oh, why don't you go with Frank Grillo or this other actor? And it's like, no, we're going to be sitting around for 2 years. Nobody's going to want to do the movie. Graham is this fucking actor. Look at his eyes. Look at his presence. He's a telekinetic. Wrote it with him in mind. So glad that I did. He fucking knocks it out of the park. Mm-hmm. And then with the cast, you know, I really wanted, because I just watched so many movies, we didn't have an audition process. We didn't have a casting director, because all of our money was in pyro and effects. So I was just casting the movie based on friends or cold calling. So I cast the movie based on people that I've seen in other movies that I thought were great. And I feel like a lot of horror movies do something where it's like, oh, this guy was, you know, a bad guy in a horror movie in the 70s. And now he does day, like, you know, let's cast him because he has a name, but he's not a good actor. With this, it's like, I wanted to cast actually good actors. And I feel like every single role is by somebody who it's like, oh, I saw them in a movie. They looked great. They fit the role. They look real. You know, they look blue collar. They don't look like a fucking model, which I hate. I hate when actors in horror movies have six packs. I don't know anybody in my actual life who has a six pack. So I don't want to watch a movie where every character has one, because I don't fucking want to hang out with those people. So, like, I just wanted to, you know, cast. And so I call people up and, you know, and see if they do the role. And thankfully everybody did. And Larry was actually supposed to play the cop.
All right.
And I was like, you know what? There's a lot of stunts. Maybe we should hire a stunt guy who can do his own stunts. And, you know, having seen the movie, that guy did all those stunts. But then I thought about it. I'm like, why don't we give Larry the dad role? You know, it's all in one location, so he can shoot it. It's 20 pages, but he can shoot it in 3-4 days. And I haven't seen him do a role like that. So I called him up, and he was super excited about it. I told him to basically think about being Dennis Hopper from True Romance. He completely agreed with that. And then, you know, he fucking kills it. Like, I feel like he's the anchor in that movie, where it's like you kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And then when Graham gets to the house and you see what their relationship is, and it's just like Larry's able to sell 20 years of a relationship with this character with just a fucking look. And I'm just like, and it's like almost that feeling that I had with Graham, but now it's like, oh, now I'm dealing with a 30-year veteran. And the thing with Larry is he's not a fucking douche. You know, he's a 30-year veteran of independent film. So he's sitting there watching me operate the camera. Like, this is so cool that you're operating the camera, asking me questions about how I do things, taking pictures. And then, like, you know, it'd be like, oh, okay, I want to get the point of view of you punching the camera. So like he'd be laying on, I'd be on the ground and he'd be on top of me punching at the camera. And he's like, all right, now we need to fake this door smashing you in the face. And he's like, all right, well, if we do it like this, and he's like just showing us little tips and tricks. And it's like, this is so fucking cool. I was so nervous about directing in front of Larry, but like he's so into what we're doing that he's like getting into it and helping us. And like, it was fucking awesome. And I really want to write a lead role for Larry. Like I want him to be a fucking star or something. I want to write him a role like I wrote Graham for The Mind's Eye.
And you, that was the other point I was going to touch on, is you're not just directing the movie, you're the cinematographer, you're the writer, you produce your own movies. Do you do that out of necessity, or is it because you like to keep a close eye on all the different aspects? And if so, is that a model that you'll continue into future movies, or would you be quite happy working with an independent DP, a separate producer, that sort of idea?
Well, it started out of necessity because I grew up shooting all my own stuff as a teenager. And then when I moved up to LA, I got a DP, but I still picked every shot, picked every lenses, decided where the lights went, and operated the camera. So my DP was kind of like, well, I'm not really a DP, I'm just sort of a gaffer, so I'm not going to do this anymore. And I got really pissed off, and I was like, well, fine, fuck you, I'm just going to DP my own stuff then. And my next thing was Almost Human, so I was like, guess I'm just going to DP Almost Human. So, and then it worked out too because we just had no money on that, so it's kind of like, oh, I need to DP it anyway, and I need to produce it. And because I had produced all of my stuff my whole life, when I produced Almost Human, I could know where it's like, all right, we don't need any money in this department, let's put all the money here. And it just allowed me to, and I needed to see where every dollar went, and nobody knows how, like, just because me and Josh, my other producing partner, knew how to do all this stuff, we just decided where every dollar went. And then with Mind's Eye, it was the same thing where it's kind of like, oh, the budget's so tight, we can't bring in another producer because then they're going to take a salary. They're not going to understand why we're doing certain things. We can't afford a DP because I want all the effects. I want all money to go into effects. So again, I just did it that way. But now, having done that twice, having produced a movie with my company and Josh and delivering it both times and having full creative control, and then seeing people be like, how did you do that on such a ridiculous budget? And it's like, well, we produced it, we decided where the money's going to go, and then people not realizing how we can do that, that just makes me want to produce everything I do, because not only then will I get more control over it, but then I can be like, guys, I've done this twice before, or three times before, or four times before, listen to me, we should do this, this, this. And then I think that will give me more control over the movies. So I always definitely want to be a producer, because I feel like that'll help impact the quality of the movie in a better way. As a cinematographer, I probably will shoot my next movie. I'm not sure yet. It really depends on a budgetary thing. I feel like there's definitely way better DPs out there than me. I feel like I can get the job done, and I can get what I see in my head a lot quicker on this low budget. Having said that, when I get more money there's a lot of DPs that I absolutely love that I'd love to hire. And when I get to the point where I can meet with them, and possibly work with them, that's when I would do it. But then also because I have such a certain way of doing things, they would need to be agreeable to kind of how I do things. But I feel like if I find a DP that I really love, I'm being more open to a collaborative relationship rather than like, all right, here's what you're doing. You know what I mean? So I definitely, and I always want to write my own stuff for sure. I've just the crap that I've been sent. Like the thing is, there's 100 horror directors that are more hotter than me, so to speak, or in the industry, that are going to get all these other scripts, and then whatever they turn down, I get. So if I just write my own stuff, I can write the stuff that I think is the fucking coolest in the world, and that I know that I can direct the shit out of. And maybe the script is has cooler characters and it's on the blacklist, but I want to fucking blow some shit up, and I want to have robots in my movie, and nobody's going to write that script except for me. So. So yeah, that's out of necessity too, I guess.
Kind of touching on you were just mentioning about like future work and stuff like that. My last question to you before I let you go is like future plans. Obviously, from speaking to you and from watching your movies, you can tell that your heart lies very much in horror. I'm assuming it's safe to say the next movie will remain within the genre. And how important is it from you as a filmmaker's point of view to get those movies out on the festival circuit as soon as possible, once you're finished and you're happy with the final cut?
Oh, the festivals are definitely like super important. I mean, because there's just nothing like, because the thing is when you if your movie just comes out on VOD, it's just out on VOD, or it just comes out in theaters, and it's kind of just up to people to go decide to do it or see it, you know, without any buzz or anything like that. But if you're at a festival, you know, if you premiere something like Fantastic Fest or Midnight Madness or Fright Fest, it's like the people going to see those movies are the best fan. Like, they're the people who want to see your movie more than anybody. So if you get those people to see your movie first, they're going to talk about it better than anybody else will be. So, like, you want those people talking about your movie before it comes out. Like, you know, you want people to be anticipating your movie, or people, you know, when the fuck is this going to come out? So, like, it's super important. You know, I'm very grateful that the festivals have been so good to me. And, you know, I honestly think that if I didn't get into any festivals of Almost Human, it wouldn't have done what it did, and it would have been even harder for me to make Mind's Eye, and I don't know if Mind's Eye would have got into festival. So, I mean, the festival, I just love going around, and I also love going around and meeting other filmmakers who are kind of doing the same thing that I'm doing from all over the world, and meeting, you know, and it's interesting to go to like somewhere like Spain or Scotland and meet the genre fans there and see what the state of horror is there. And I never realized it, but fucking, you know, in Europe, like, horror fans are fucking hardcore, like, and it, you know, and it's like, God, I want to go to Europe where people appreciate me. It's like, you know, and I saw a quote from John Carpenter where he's like, you know, in Europe I'm a genius, and in America I'm a bum. It's like, no, you're not a bum. Like, they just fucking don't respect you here, man.
And so, is it safe to say that the next movie will continue that horror genre love?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've got a really brutal satanic summer camp movie I want to do. I wrote a super brutal body horror time travel movie with my buddy Mickey Keating. Those are both bigger budgeted. If neither one of them happen, I'm just going to write like a super fucking gnarly NC-17 16mm horror movie, you know, out of anger, just to fucking throw a curveball out there.
Well, Joe, thank you very much. I literally could probably speak to you for the next 3 hours, and I still feel like we would have loads to talk about. It's been an absolute pleasure for you coming on. Like I say, watched your movie last night, absolutely fucking loved it. It's out on VOD and iTunes in the States 5th of August 2016. Joe, you take care of yourself, and all the best for the future, sir.
Alright, cool. Thank you so much, man.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
How peaceful it looks.
Most effective, Your Majesty. Will you destroy this Earth?
Destroy it utterly. Send Rick and Benny in Wool Rocket Ajax.
So, just destroy it?
That's what Ming said. Don't you ever listen?
Well, there's no arguing with Ming.
Hail Ming. Wait! You see those transmissions on the Visua screen?
Crow? Nightmare on Elm Street?
Chud 2? Black Belt Jones?
Nightbreed?
What's a critter?
Oh, I've seen those things.
Flash? I guess we could wait a while before the destruction.
Yeah, and watch the movies.
And talk about them.
The Hell Ming Power Hour. Disobedience to Ming. For now.
You can find us at Legion Podcast.
You can find us on Facebook.
iTunes.
We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram.
At You know what? Just Google it for yourself.
Just Google it, you bastages.
Hail Ming.
Breaking 2? Electric Boogaloo?
Samurai Cop?
Army of Darkness?
Flash Dance?
We might destroy the planet if it's Flash Dance.
And welcome back. So let's discuss The Mind's Eye from 2015. It's just been released, like I said in the previous segment, on VOD and on iTunes as of Friday the 5th of August, so just a few days ago. And the movie was written and directed by Joe Begos, the very chap I just spoke to on the show. The movie stars Graham Skipper, Laura Ashley Carter, John Spiridekos, Larry Fessenden, Noah Segan, Matt Mercer, Jeremy Gardner, Patrick M. Walsh. There are other folks in the movie, but let's take you through the IMDb synopsis, which is a bit lengthier than I usually read out, so bear with me. It says, Zach Connors and Rachel Meadows were born with incredible psychokinetic capabilities. When word of their supernatural talent gets out, they find themselves the prisoners of Michael Slovak, a deranged doctor intent on harvesting their powers. After daring escape, they are free from his sinister institution, but the corrupt doctor will stop at nothing to track them down so he may continue to siphon their gifts for his own use. Right, where to begin with this movie? This movie is fucking bitching. If you grew up watching movies from the 1980s and just loving how over the top, insane, the practical effects just going everywhere, fucking bitching soundtrack, then The Mind's Eye is the movie for you. I had an absolute blast watching this movie. Funny, Joe was saying in his interview that, you know, that the influence came from not only David Cronenberg but Brian De Palma, and you can really see that. Fury clearly plays an influence on this movie. Stylistically, colour wise, it owes nods to directors such as Argento or Bava. Lovely use of like purple light, and in fact the lighting in the movie is just brilliant all over, which blows my mind when you realise that Joe did all the cinematography as well as all the editing, direct and wrote it. That's, you know, I mean, the man is clearly a talent which needs to be watched very, very carefully. I loved his movie from a couple of years ago, Almost Human. I know some folks out there were indifferent, to say the least, on the movie. They maybe just didn't think it was as great as I did, but I thought he nailed that movie. It was a really weird science fiction horror movie. And this one is a bit more, dare I say, mainstream, even though it's not. Like it said in the synopsis there, we basically follow, for the majority of the movie, Zach Connors, played by the fantastic Graham Skipper. He was brilliant in Almost Human, and his work just makes me want to see more of what he's doing. I think he's a great actor, and I hope he continues his working relationship with Joe Begos. This movie has Larry Fessenden in it. If that doesn't alone sell this movie for you, I don't know what will. He's fantastic. He plays Mike Connors in this one, so he plays Zach's dad. And when he comes into this movie, there's a warmness about it. I won't say what happens to Larry overall, but if you're a fan of Fessenden's cameos, then I think you can probably guess. Think Sean Bean, and you're in the same ballpark, and it's wonderful to see. The movie also stars Jeremy Gardner, he of The Battery fame. He's fucking brilliant in this. I love him as an actor as well as a director. I thought he was great in Spring as well, his small cameo in that one. But he plays a security officer, Vince, and it adds a bit of comedy to the role that certainly works very well for it. The special effects are all practical. The soundtrack is phenomenal. I really, really, really want to own this soundtrack. And the movie touches on a lot of the beats of movies you have seen before, but it's very reverential. It's not plagiarising anything. It's taking ideas and morphing them in a way which will make you pine for like, see, when this finished, I just wanted to watch some 80s horror, like, straight away. And Joe's certainly tapped into that with his last movie and the one before. I think he just really has an affinity for that decade, and he brings it in a way which doesn't feel cheap, but instead feels like someone who is actually paying reverence to the quirkiness and wackiness of that decade. The movie is quick, let's put it that way. I think it's about an hour and a half long, and it flew in for me. I was actually surprised when it finished. I could have done with another 10-15 minutes, and that's not a slight to anything. It's just really well paced and great storytelling. I can't really talk about it anymore. I really want to go into spoiler details on it, and I may do that somewhere down the line. I can see this being a movie that I want to revisit and review on a show with a guest, so we can talk about how fucking gnarly and bitching this movie is. Joe Begos is the real deal, ladies and gents. He's 2 for 2 for me, and I cannot wait, legitimately cannot wait to see where he goes next. And he has teased, obviously, in the interview, a couple of script ideas he's got, and any of them will make me a happy camper. So I really hope he gets some more funding, gets out there and makes some more movies. And the only way he'll be able to do that is from the support of you guys going to check out his 90s movie. So like I say, it's now on VOD and on iTunes. You rent the movie, own the movie, go and check it out. It's The Mind's Eye. It was released on the 5th of August. If I was to give it a score on Netflix grades, 1 hated it, 2 didn't like it, 3 liked it, 4 really liked it, and 5 loved it, this is a 4.5 for me. This is a whole hell of a lot of fun. Check this movie out. I'm going to take a very short break just now. When I come back, I'm closing out this bonus episode right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been bonus episode number 20, which featured a review of The Mind's Eye and an interview with the director of that movie, Joe Begos. Once again, can I thank Joe for coming on the show, clearing some time on what can only be described as a rather hectic schedule, his movie making its way to VOD as of the 5th of August. I can't recommend this one enough. It couldn't be any more different than the movie I recommended on Friday. The Mind's Eye is just a really fun, head-exploding, gory, practical effects everywhere, all over the place, a lovely hug to the 1980s. It's a soapy hand job to every movie you grew up watching in the 1980s. It's influenced by Cronenberg. It just has that 80s vibe. Go and check it out. It has Larry fucking Fessenden in it. If that hasn't sold it for you, I don't know what will. Yeah, it's a fantastic movie, so please check it out. There's a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. You can go over to iTunes, and if you do, please leave us a review. The more reviews we get over there, let's say they're 5 stars, for example, the higher up the charts we get pushed, the more likely people will check out the show. You can also check us out on SoundCloud. You can check us out on Stitcher Smart Radio and on Legion Podcast Network, surrounded by a multitude of fantastic, wonderful shows. This week, I would like to recommend to you the Hail Ming Power Hour. Danny and Ricky discuss the movies you grew up loving, and they do it in a fun, quirky, and always entertaining way. I can't recommend that show enough, exclusively on Legion Podcast Network. You can check out the podcast Under the Stairs Facebook group page by going to facebook.com/groups/teapotscast, or on Instagram and on Twitter at teapotscast. You guys have a fantastic rest of your weekend. I will be back tomorrow with the return of the Teapot scheduled episodes. We're looking at number 6 on my top 10 Stephen King shows. It's Salem's Lot. I'm joined by a fantastic group of podcasters. We're going to talk about why that movie ruined our childhoods. I'll be back tomorrow for that. Please take care of yourselves wherever you are and whatever you're doing. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs. Signing off.
I dream a day that God will surface to retrieve his nails and open your heart. You'll say
All this time I've prayed for this day to come true. No one knows how deep the waves we've waded through. I wish I could take your